This is Sean with Voices of St. Joan of Arc, and I'm speaking with George Maley. George, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Sean.
And are you getting close to 90 years on this planet?
90 is on my 90th year of life.
All right. So when was your birthday?
11/31. It was on Armistice Day, back before we had Veterans Day.
Okay.
November the 11th.
And what city were you born in?
Indianapolis.
You're born in Indianapolis. Was it on, kind of always in the same area on the near north side?
Yes, I lived in the parish. I was raised originally at 4500 on North College Avenue, then 5400 on Washington Boulevard. Always been in the parish of Joan of Arc, except for a few years when I was at St. Thomas Aquinas, because I had my kids in school back in the 50s, because I couldn't get them into Joan of Arc. I lived then, and after I got out of the service, I bought a home over on Meridian Street, 4531 North Meridian Street.
Okay.
I'm actually in the boundaries of Joan of Arc, but they had 1,000 kids over there, and so I went over to Monsignor Bosser, suggested I take my kids over to Father Finneran, or Father Halloran, and put them in the school over there, which is only about 500 yards from where I lived.
And so just to kind of recap, your grade school and high school and college, what were those?
St. Joan of Arc.
Okay.
8 years. Cathedral High School. 4 years. Hold on a second. No, I don't bet. My wife. So Cathedral High School, 4 years. Purdue University, 4 years, graduate in Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering.
Okay.
Then 2 years of University of Pennsylvania, Wharton School of Finance.
All right.
MBA. And then 2 years in the Air Force, second lieutenant, graduated into first lieutenant after 6 months. I was the head of the management analysis officer. Chief of the Management Analysis Section at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, of which the unit that I was assigned to was the Air Force Institute of Technology. It was a university taught various subjects, including nuclear engineering.
So what did you go into after you're in the service?
Came back to Indianapolis. I worked for a small finance companies, and my father was killed in a hunting accident when I was 4 years of age, 1936. My mother remarried when I was in college in 1951. He had a small finance company, and I worked for him for a couple of years, and then I ventured out into a small insurance company, which he needed some help in because his company at that time out. I grew that company from two people. I borrowed $10,000, and I eventually sold it about 20. I sold it in, and I retired from that in 87. I sold it to St. Regis Paper Company, grew the company up to 235 people, and I was writing insurance, special type of insurance, in the two-thirds of the eastern part of the United States.
That's impressive.
So, and then I did consulting work and then got into the, had a partner, John Kelly, Generation Less than myself. I bought a farm down in Owen County. We raised timber, raised cattle, raised, we sublet out for beans and corn. I also got involved in an automobile company, buying and selling it. Classic cars, did that for a number of years. A multifaceted person.
Well, it seems like you've had a very well-rounded run, and you've been pretty successful in everything you've gotten involved with.
I've had a few ups and downs.
Oh, sure. So as far as the church, how do you describe kind of the attitude and just the parishioners and just the family atmosphere? How would you kind of describe the church and the people?
St. Joan of Arc Church?
Yeah.
Well, it's a lot different than when I was going to school there, church there. line that when I went to Joan of Arc from grade 1 to grade 8, there were 700 kids there.
Okay.
We had 43 boys in the 8th grade. We had 43 girls in the 8th grade, and it filtered on back. We had nuns, and the nuns were very accomplished women, good educators, gave a tremendous amount of religious thought in what they did, very dedicated, tremendous sense of discipline, giving the example. When you have 700 kids, after Mass, the principal, Sister Mary Agnes, at the back of the church would ring a bell, and everybody would stand up, and she'd ring it again, and then we all genuflect. When she'd ring it again, then we all got in the aisle. And then she'd ring it again, we start to march out, orderly. And we will then walk across to the school, into the school, in order. Now keep in mind this was during the war.
Right.
So there was a sense of war discipline. And the sense that those nuns gave us, with the spirituality that they taught us, and as well as the subjects that we learned, it was a disciplined atmosphere. We had 43 boys, no teacher's aid. We would have three sections, the middle average students, the poor students, middle, and she could conduct three classes of reading at the same time. We learned, and we respected, and it was just an entirely different atmosphere. In terms of the church, during the war years, the churches were packed. Many times I would go, I'd get a ride on Sunday Mass, because my mom would go to 11:30 Mass with my sister. I'd get a ride for the 9 o'clock Mass with Mr. Clee, attorney. He'd pick me up, and sometimes he would not get there, always on time. And I had to stand on the aisle about one quarter of the way up, because all the seats were taken. Monsignor Bosler, who was then the pastor, he was a great guy and very profound in his saying of the Mass. His rubrics were extremely good. There were a bunch of priests at the rectory. The rectory, as we see it today, was called, was built by Duke Desitel, Leon Desitel. He lived across the street. Cost about $250,000. He was the one that ran the drive to raise the funds, and he kicked in a pretty good chunk of money. But before that, when we had a house during the war, the guys would congregate on the front porch in the summertime with the priests. We had trouble priests there. We didn't know what trouble priests were, but they were. And guys would go down there and talk to the priests. We had altar service from 6:30 Mass, 7 o'clock Mass, 7:30 Mass, 8 o'clock Mass. And we'd have, I think it was probably five priests living at that rectory. And sometimes they would come over to the school and teach, not very often. But the relationship between the servers and the priests was profound. We'd have, on Sunday at 3 o'clock, we'd have benediction, and it was well attended. All the Masses were well attended. And we'd have to fast. That's the reason I went to an earlier Mass. My mother would not necessarily fast on my sister. So I would go. I'd stop. I would fast from 12 o'clock on. I didn't eat until I got back from Mass at about 10:30. Those are the regimens that we had. It was a much calmer period of time. And, of course, as I said, the war was on. The church was Mr. Krieger. Ed Krieger was our organist, and he played the organ at every Mass during the week. I think he had not necessarily the 6:30 Mass. I know he played it at the 8 o'clock Mass. And when we have a requiem Mass, it was black vestments. You never see black vestments today. The one thing I recall about him, on Sunday, when I would go to communion, he would play on the organ, Clair de Lune. I thought that was religious music. Beautiful. Beautiful. And the other music that he played was outstanding. And we had an excellent choir. It was mostly men. I don't recall women being in the choir. That all changed in the post-war period. The area around St. Joan of Arc was primarily Catholic. I don't really, of course, I lived at 54th and Washington Boulevard, so I didn't see the other action going on. But we had Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts, and I might add that I went to the fifth grade in the old school, the old church, and I had sister Catherine Sienna and Sister Louise. Sister Louise was a good-looking nun. She was right out of the novitiate. They're out of the order down, and they're all nuns from Terre Haute, Sisters of Providence. And Sister Catherine Sienna, she taught us fractions. So it was in the fifth grade. And I can recall her, a tall nun, very delightful. And she would take an orange and open it up and split it in two, break it in two. And she would, now this is half, then she'd break them in quarters. That's how she taught us fractions. And then in sixth grade, we were taught decimals. And so those are some of my recollections. The nuns would take, at Christmas time, would take and paste on the windows of the school candles, like Christmas candles, and some figures on the front board indicating the Christmas season. Tremendous amount of respect. And one story I've told so many times, Sean,
yep.
When I was in eighth grade, coming in 1944, we all knew that Sister Rose Lorette was going to be our nun. And she was known throughout the school from previous generations. And when we got up, we were now Top Gun. We sat all the boys, and we split the classes in the eighth grade. We had girls and boys in the seventh grade all the way back. But in the eighth grade, we separated the boys from the girls. And ours were the first seven pews on the left side, the front pews, and then Sister Rosalita sat behind us. And of course, they had the old habits, so you couldn't see their face, the hoods around their face. So on the first day, I should say the first Tuesday after Labor Day, we all, Top Gun, we all marched over. Charlie, how you doing? Did you have a good summer? What did you do? And all this, there was absolutely no discipline. And Sister Rose Loretta, the 8th grade room was, you would walk into school, there was a statue of Our Lady, and the first room, about, I'd say maybe 15 yards later on, was on the left-hand side, the north side. That was our room. We knew where it was. And she's standing on the east side, and she's sticking straight, looking straight ahead. You can't see her. So we all jump into the room. They'd take any suit we want. Hey, did you have a good summer? And we'd start chattering. And then after everybody settled down, seated, she came into the classroom. And she closed the door gently. And she started to walk across the room to the center of the room. And we were sort of still talking a little bit. But she didn't stop. Now she goes over the radiator by the window. And she stops momentarily. And then she turns around away from us. You can't see her. You can't see this woman's face. And she walks very slowly across the room to the door. By this time, you can just hear the beads, the only thing you can hear. And we've all calmed down. So she goes around. We think she's going to go down to the principal's. I know she doesn't. She stops. And then she momentarily turns around again, away from us. And she walks to the center of the room. And then she turns to us. And she says, "Now these are my rules. What's them up?" I still remember the first five rules.
What are they?
I'll gun. You're going to be traffic cops. You can do this, do that, what have you. Well, she had a litany. But she had total control. Total control from that day forward. And her word was the word. Don't cross that woman. She had to be the hand of, and we're a bunch of hot-blooded Irishers.
Right.
You go to public school, they, it's game. It's entirely different.
I get it. You know, as you've grown throughout the years, and what type of either organizations or things within the church did you get involved with? And like French Market, did you ever help out with that? Or what some of the things that you really, you know, try to help with?
Well, I've helped out on French Market. It goes back a long ways back. I got involved in St. Vincent de Paul over in Dayton, Ohio, when I was in the Air Force. And when I came out of the Air Force in 57, I went to Monsignor Basra and said, do you have the St. Vincent de Paul Society here? He said, that's, of course, he knew me. Bishop Ritter was the one that confirmed me. I received my first communion on the same day I received my confirmation. I received my first confession about 4 days earlier. It was bang, bang, bang. But I saw Monsignor Bond. I said, is there a St. Vincent de Paul Society? He said, well, that's strange. And there was a gentleman from Evansville named Ray Wargle. He was here about a week ago. He said, you call Ray up. I said, I don't know him, but I'll call him. So the two of us formed the St. Vincent de Paul Society at Joan of Arc.
Wow.
And the only other one that I knew of was down at St. Catherine's on the south side, and the gentleman's quite elderly. And so I then went over to St. Joan of Arc, and I was going over to St. Thomas Aquinas and formed one over there because my kids were over there. And then later on became the particular council chairman. And because I was in community interfaith housing, I was the president of that later on, building houses with, it was an ecumenical group, had Jews and agnostics and everybody else. I relinquished St. Vincent de Paul Society and stayed in that building. Homes down about the 2500 on Central Avenue over to Delaware Street. So I was down there for a period of time. I got involved with the Sarah Club in 65 and just worked my way up. And lo and behold, they asked me to go on the board, which I didn't want to do. I became the president of our club and the district council, district governor, and all that. And Matt McCluskey, former governor, president of Sarah International, asked me to come on the board. And I said, I don't want to do it. Well, there's a doctor running down the local. You'll be running against us. Oh, I know that guy. He'll win. Well, he did, and I won. And 5 years time, I became the president of Sarah International. And that was in 90 and 91, I believe. Got involved with the Knights of the Holy Sepulchre. I grew that organization from 36 to 105. Then I got involved with the Knights of Malden. And my wife and I are both in those two organizations. And in our Malden work, I go down to the soup kitchen. We meet once a month. And so that's basically where I got involved in religious work. It was on the Capital Improvements Board when we built the Hoosier Dome. And the story on that, when we had the contest of what to call it, there was all kinds of names that came in for that. I had a good friend, Jim Dorham. He has since passed. He was on the board. He had the motels for holiday around the city here, and he was on the convention board, on the tourist board, tourists and what have you. So we were on the Capital Improvements Board, And there was only about six or seven of us. P.E. McAllister was the chairman, myself, Amanda Strong. We had an attorney and a couple other guys. One guy was the trucking business. So I came down the name, and this was in about 78 when Indiana University was hired. They won the national championship. Everybody was enthralled with Indiana University. So the name that I thought would be more appropriate than anything else was a Hoosier Dome. And Jim looked at me, and we both went to Purdue. I'll be damned if I'm going to call that the Hoosier Dome. I said, why? Bobby and I said, Jim.
That the Boilermaker Dome? Is that the issue?
I said, I'm a Hoosier. I was born a Hoosier. I love my state. I go to the State Fair every year. Get off of it. I said, I can say that to you because... And his daughter was my daughter's. They were in the Pi Phi sorority, and they all knew each other. And I just shamed him. Oh, George, come on. And I said, come on, Jim, get off of it. All right. So I looked at P.E. I said, P.E., call the vote for those of them. All those in favor of the motion? Signify saying aye. Aye, aye. Jim, I bet. Yeah, I guess so. Fast.
Well, good job.
Well, anyway, of course they changed it a couple of years later because the RCA came in. Now we got Lucas Oil Stadium.
Well, yeah, but you know, to have it pure and not sponsored, if it should be the Hoosier Dome, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I was on the Marine. I've been all kinds of different organizations: Marine Street Foundation, the Bone and Stonium Boards. So I've done my part for the city as well.
Right, and, so as far as some other people that you've seen really try to make a difference in St. Joan of Arc, who are some individuals you'd like to mention?
Well, inside of the Sarah Club, Bob Allardine brought me on to the Knights of the Holy Sepulchre. My attorney, Gene Burris, who was of the Methodist Church, he was a mentor for me. And I might add, Sean, that not having a father, I was mentored by a whole host of great people. And I'll mention them to you. First of all, Colonel Sergeant and Colonel Hartman at Wright Patterson Air Force Base, who were in the University and the Air Force Institute of Technology. Colonel Hartman took a particular liking to me, as well as Colonel Sergeant. They taught me the discipline of military life. And I ended up as being the aide-de-camp to Colonel Hartman. And he wanted me to stay in the service. I looked at it, but I didn't want to make a service my life. Those are two guys. And Gene Burris was my attorney and consultant in all my business activities. And we got involved in a variety of different ventures together. I had another firm called Quick Claim Service that was an adjunct to my insurance company. We were involved in that. So I would say my stepfather for a couple of years was a mentor to me. He was one that suggested I go to Purdue University. And I was always thinking about Purdue. I applied to two universities. I applied to Notre Dame. Everybody applied to Notre Dame and Purdue. But I wanted to go into chemical engineering. Well, Notre Dame did not have much of a reputation for chemical engineering. It was a football college, a liberal arts, basically. So I went on to Purdue. I was a Phi Delta at Purdue, Phi Delta Theta. And lo and behold, I helped initiate Neil Armstrong in my fraternity. And doing well.
Wow.
And my fraternity life, and my fraternity brothers, for about 15 years, every other year, we'd bring them back to our farm, and we'd host them for that weekend. And then we would, one year we went down to French Lick, another time we went up to Greencastle and to the Tank Museum up there, Fred Ropke. And then we'd go to the football game on Saturday. Then we'd come on back. So I was very active. In fact, I'm on the they want me to go into the foundation board to find Delta Theta, but right now I'm a little bit past my prime. So the mentors in my life and the priests, I got good guidance by the priests. Over there at Dayton, Ohio, and here in Indianapolis, I knew priests that had some difficulties in their life, and priests that were great priests. All the priests that I had dealings with were great priests. Father Tom Murphy of St. Joan of Arc, we were in a supper club back in 57. He was a year behind me at Cathedral. We got in a supper club for 4 years. And so when he went off the priesthood, he was a past president of Sarah International. I sort of followed in his footsteps a couple years later. And then I followed him back to Indianapolis and was in the St. Joan of Arc Parish until he moved on to St. John's. So those are just a couple of the people that had an influence on me. Jim Lockery, I met in the Sarah Club. Men in the, and women, in the Knights of this Holy Sepulchre and Knights of Malta.
I've got a question. So is there any advice you would like to give, you know, the people that are currently there helping make everything happen that you foresee for the future? Is there anything you'd like to relay to them?
Yes. I think that we're living two things. I think that we need a sense of hope for tomorrow. I see a decline in the essence of life. When I go down to the soup kitchens before we had COVID-19, I'd get in there with those guys. And I said, how many of you guys are looking for a job? So they're hiring up at Lowe's. And when I was doing the St. Vincent's Ball work, I learned this earlier on. We used to go out, the people at the hospitals were actually from World War I earlier on. That's in Dayton, because there's still guys in there with gas problems, poison gas. I think it's important that Catholics today that have a sense of the future and have a strong faith perspective to reshackle themselves in the faith. I would say that 80% of the Catholics that I know do not believe that the Eucharist is the body and blood of Christ. They recognize, they think of it as it represents Christ. I'm down in Jacksonville, Florida, and I'm looking at some of the churches. There was a Presbyterian church I went into, and I just sat in the pew, and the minister came and was a female. And I asked her, I said, you serve communion. Well, yes, we serve. How do you look at communion? Well, it represents the body and blood of Christ. With the body. And they give them grape juice. But it represents, it is not the body and blood of Christ. And I think that I can tell a priest by his rubrics whether he believes it or not. I've known priests that don't believe at all. They don't have to tell me that. I can sense it by how they address themselves at the table with the Lord. I think we're going to find a time, we got it right now. There's a sense of loss, there's a sense of despair, there's a sense of anger, there's a sense of hate. And it's creeping over us, and it's going to get worse. And so my thought is, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead.
I agree.
You face the adversity, and you go for broke when there is no sense of hope. You've got to give people hope. And the older people, this COVID-19 has scared the lights out of them. I go to Mass every day I can. I don't worry about COVID-19. And when I took the hydroxychloroquine off with a zinc bat, that's a political move. That stuff clears. The president took it. I don't trust Dr. Fauci as far as I can throw him with my left finger. That is creating a sense of anxiety. And as I said, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. Now, torpedoes in those days were mines. They weren't. That was Admiral Dewey going in Manila Bay in 1898, Spanish-American War. I belong to a literary club. I'm a published historian. I had an adventure with a German baroness chasing her car. I said I had a relationship with that woman. I did. Wasn't sexual, kind of. And I'm having a man come to me that's going to try to write my life's history. And I got another one that's trying to write a movie on it. So I'm a man that has, that I'm well-read. People always think, did you teach history? No. But I know more history than most of the history teachers do. I know that in high school, and even some colleges. So I have lived a fulfilled life.
Right.
And whatever the Lord is, however my time goes, I lost four friends last week. I lost Carl Henn. Dick Wheeler, his wife called me out in California. I went to Purdue with him. He came to the 500-mile race. I was involved in automobile racing. My parents were. I had a classic car business called Sam Ritz Motor Car Company. I'd buy and sell cars. I had everything from a 1919 Stutz to a 1922 Moon to a 1925 Hispano Suiza, a 1932 Packard, a couple Rolls Royces. Had about five Rolls Royces. We buy them and sell them. I had Cadillacs, Packards, Mercedes-Benz, Jaguars. So that was another adventure in my life. I did that while I was in the insurance business as a sideline. But my home has always been basically St. Joan of Arc. I go to Mass there Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday, go to nighttime there. I take my wife. And Friday night, I usually go to Mass. She wants to go to Mass on Saturday. But she likes to take it and relax on Sunday. So she calls the shot.
Right.
So I've had a full life.
You definitely have.
St. Joan of Arc. And talking with Father Roberts, the people that were there in the early days of the church were money people. The church is not money people anymore. They're gone. They've moved out to St. Luke's, or they're out in Carmel, Our Lady of Mount Carmel, St. Elizabeth Seton. So we're striving right now. We're tough. The church is glorious. Father Roberts has been a blessing to us, and I'm very close to him. And I applaud him. Of all the pastors that have been there, I've known him, almost all of them, he's the finest homilist and one of the most sincere priests that I know of. And he is he's a challenge to all of us that want to learn more about the faith, and he is a dynamo. He has one more year before the bishop moves him on. I don't know who we're going to have as a replacement. So I wish the church well, and I'm sure it will continue. But and I've seen the manifestation of women. We used to have a Legion of Mary down there. And when I would go to school, we had a cafeteria downstairs. At school, we'd get our lunch down there. I would brown bag it. I'd take my brown. I'd have a ham salad sandwich, have a deviled egg. I'd have my mama put in some potato chips and a pickle and a couple of cookies, and I'd buy a glass of milk for a nickel. I was well satisfied. What else could I? So I think that the expectations are much greater than the ability to achieve those. And when I was in college growing, the girls who went to college, their next step was to get married. They would have sometimes jobs, they'd teach school. We had one female aeronautical engineer at Purdue at the time, before we had astronauts and such. When I went to Purdue, it's like going from cathedral back to cathedral. There was very few girls up there. It was a 7-to-1 ratio.
Right.
And all the classes that I took were basically males, except for English 1 and English 31. And I took a drama class, and the psychology class was a joke. the economics class, all he could teach was a bunch of curves in Keynesian economics. I took it over Wharton for one full year, and I learned my economics. I interviewed a guy from Notre Dame who wanted me to try to find him a job, and I was asking about Federal Reserve policy and the some of the aspects of finance, and he did not have a proper desk, but I got it at Wharton. I had courses and good professors, and I say this with a, not as a braggadocious statement, but rather as I was very fortunate. The times were different. The education was different. It was solid. It was there was no sexual innuendos. I remember Father Bosler of Antioch in 1941 or 42 condemning the movie Two-Faced Woman from the pulpit. It was the same movie playing over there at the Uptown Theater. He condemned it on Sunday with Greta Garbo. It was a different time.
Right.
Different. And we become educated. We are people that love to be entertained. We love our sports. We didn't have that. I used to play touch football over at Marty Dayon's on after school. A bunch of guys get together, most about half Jews and half Gentiles, because I grew up with a lot of Jewish people. And I'd come home and hit the books or read. Still real. So it was just an entirely different time. And
sure.
Not that these times are bad times, they're different times. But it's the fruit of the times that brings either the best, the worst, or the mediocrity in us. And right now, I don't see where we are harvesting grain that will be sufficient to feed the people for tomorrow.
Well, I agree.
And so that's it. And St. John Vianney's in a wonderful place. Carol Henn, who just passed away, he was in our little group, Tuesday morning group. And he was quite a guy.
I was able to interview Carl on December 16th. And
you got him.
And his, being able to hear him tell his points of view and even about writing the book, The 50 Years of St. Joan of Arc. It was pretty impressive, but I'm glad that we were able to save his voice,
yeah.
Right, you know, before they had to put him in hospice. But I really appreciate your time, George. You've covered a lot of really good stuff that I know that the parish is going to really enjoy being able to hear.
Well, it's a story of all of us. You can call up. I don't know. Is Paul Bosler on your list?
Possibly. They're still supplying more names.
Well, there's guys that have left. I will tell you, a couple guys that call in my Bill Stuldrer. He lived next. The Stuldrers lived next to the rectory. And Paul Bosler is a nephew of Ray Bosler. No, that I think they were. Yeah, he was a Ray Bosler was our pastor there, and he was quite a guy. And those are the two guys that I know of. That might be interviewed. And I think that my stories will reflect one thing, but I want to interview Bill Stuldrer and Paul Bosler to get their take.
Okay.
And see how they approach the same situation.
Okay.
Now, I was not an altar boy. I substituted a couple of times, but I couldn't get back. I couldn't get a church. And I tell you, another guy you should talk to. Is Bob Desotel. He's in the city. Yeah, they're not in the parish.
Okay.
But those guys can give you a little bit of the history of the past. A little bit of the past. It might be of interest to you. The parish debt from the building of that church was paid off in 55. The last pledge. Too that long.
Wow.
And the original church was going to have terrazzo floor. Didn't have it. Ran out of money.
I think they definitely did a great job with the recent restoration.
Well, they did a great job then. It was magical how Father Robertson, the committee, raise money. Scott Rosenthal, I don't know, you'll be talking to him. He's my dentist. He's been very, he's been a major leader in that church over the past years.
Okay.
When I was at St. Thomas Aquinas on the parish council, I did all that stuff. But then I came back when Father Schmidlin came back and he asked me to come back to the church. And he was the one that mentored me in St. Vincent de Paul Society. So he got to me back, he said, George, I need some money. Well, what do you need the money on? I got to fix the ceiling. I said, how much you need? I said, how many? 10 grand. I said, all right, check. Good, 10 grand.
That's great. All right, well, George, if you feel you've covered it enough, I'm going to close this out, but I'd like you to stay on the line, if that's all right.
Do you want me to stay on the line?
Yeah, just
no,
stay
I'm not
the line.
Done.
Just another like a minute. I'm going to close this out, so just stay on the line.
Let's close it up, okay.
Thanks, George.
Okay.